Good morning, and thank you for joining me today. I am your host, David. Welcome to Tube Talk, the best podcast about coiled tube set manufacturing. This week, I am joined by Paul Norden. Behind Howie from our first episode, Paul is the second longest tenured employee at ATS Life Sciences Chicago. Over his time at ATS, Paul has spent many years in the operations side of the business, working his way from project manager to director of project management. He has recently transitioned into the front end of the business, working as the director of applications for the last 6 years. Hey, Paul, thank you for coming on to Tube Talk today. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I'd love to dive right in if you're ready to get going.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Awesome. So to start it off, I'd love... Just to hear a little bit about what a typical manual tube set assembly process looks like at less than 10 parts per minute versus 60.
Sure. So let's say you're putting together a smaller segment. I've seen production facilities where it's 2, 3, 4 operators, 5 operators around a small table, nothing more. Mm-hmm. And they're each performing one individual process, whether it's dipping the glue and putting on the solvent and putting on a connector, whether it's, you know, bending it and putting some tape around it, or trimming it. So it's a small group. They're usually having a good time talking to each other and knocking out, 10, 12 parts a minute. When you go into a multi-segment or a full, say an IV tube set, I was just recently at a plant in Mexico where I walked in the room. It was one shift, and the host said there were 500 people putting that tube set together. They were making, I believe the rate was about 60 parts per minute, 70 parts per minute. And the amount of people was just amazing. Duplicate lines of 10 to 20 operators. He described how they have to change out operators mid-shift because of fatigue, repetition. So they would have to do something else after lunch because it just got so, mind-numbing. And it took up a fair amount of clean room floor space. And most of us know clean room floor space is quite expensive to maintain and to keep that clean room status. So the smaller, the better.
Right on. Moving on here. What challenges do medical device producers experience with manual assembly of tube sets?
There's quite a few. The number of operators, of course. In some of the locations, there are multiple customers doing similar tube sets. And that kind of promotes leaving your present company, for just a small amount of money, which could be big in that country, and walk down the street and get a new job. So now we're faced with retraining, onboarding, the fixed expenses with that, and just continually turning over workforce. And they're people, they're fantastically dedicated when they are working, but it's human error is just part of life. So you're going to see some quality degradation versus an automatic machine, because you're using their eyes to check things. They're using their hands to insert things, without a lot of ability for downstream checks. It's it's a people business and people approach, and you're just counting on the people to do the best you possibly can. The number of people generates more floor space, as I already mentioned. So what else would be a problem? Oh, just the sheer amount of material, because these lines are probably good for 10 or 12, like we talked about. But if you need 60 or 70, you need 6 or 7 lines. So each one of those lines has to have product brought to it. They're very hungry.
Yeah.
So you got constantly have to keep supplying duplicate lines with tubing, with connectors, with solvent, with tape. And that's like an army just supporting the army, putting the tube sets together. So army on top of an army.
Wow. That's quite a picture you're painting here. Just thinking about that.
I wish I could share my vision that I'm seeing in my head right now with the audience, because it is a sea of people for a high volume manufacturer.
I mean, I can only imagine. And, you know, actually, speaking of people, I wonder what manual processes are replaced with automation and what kind of headcount reduction is typically achieved by that?
Okay. So again, it's kind of a variable answer here, but, I'm going to kind of go back through my versions of machines, a small tail machine or single segment machine. You're going to replace 5 operators. As you grow, you're going to get as much as 10 to 20 for a dual segment machine. And then you'll be in the 80s to 90s to 100 for a full assembly machine. And that's per shift. So multiply every number I just stated by 3. And that's the number of people you are moving on to something else or, frankly, replacing, right, with the automation. Yeah. So it's significant. And again, we'll go to the benefits at some point, but it's clear the headcount is the biggest benefit.
Absolutely. Actually, speaking of other benefits, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how does the headcount reduction result in savings or benefits to the customer other than straight operator costs?
I would state the biggest savings you're going to have is fallout, bad parts, rejects. Okay. You're going to have a system that's reliable. You got to pick a good supplier for that system, but it's reliable. And the reject rates we've achieved here are in the 1% range. Whereas if you're using operators, you've got to be a little careful. I'll get back to that in a second, but probably into the 2 to 5% range for operator assembled tube sets. The other issue with operator assembled tube sets is if you don't catch the reject, it gets out. Mm-hmm. And that is an uncaptured quality defect that goes to the nurse, the doctor, the whatever health practitioner is using it. And that's a black eye against a particular company. So you just don't do it, right? It's a holy grail. It's a mortal sin. So that's where the automation comes into play. It captures the rejects at a very consistent level, even though it's low. You won't let anything get out the building that is unacceptable.
Right.
And going backwards a little bit, you know, you're going to save floor space. You're going to save turnover, HR. You know, it kind of goes on and on with the people thing. And you'll save just raw material because, again, the machines are more efficient. Operators can kind of judge how much they have to trim a tube before they can use it. Mm-hmm. Our machines take off the minimum. So we might go from 20 millimeters that an operator chops off down to 2 millimeters or 3 millimeters that the machine will cut off in order to provide a good edge for the insertion process. Mm-hmm. So there's some technical benefits that really any benefit we give has to be associated with cost savings. Otherwise, it's not really a benefit.
Right. You know, I really appreciate that answer. It's interesting to see all the benefits aside from just operator costs and see how much is brought on with automation. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yep, it is. And you know, again, the really big benefit is you don't let anything get out the door that's wrong.
So I think the last question I have here for you, what can customers expect when changing from manual to automatic assembly?
So a lot of it's, you know, I try not to repeat myself, but I'm going to, you know, you're going to get a higher quality product and a more consistent product. But you're also going to find out how consistent your product is.
Right.
By that, I mean, automation is the most impactful and or best way to check the quality of your product because it expects consistency. Mm-hmm. not that we can't handle maybe a variation from the drawing, as long as that variation is consistent. So you're going to find out if your tubing extruders are doing their job shift to shift consistently the minute you turn on the machine with your tube. You're going to find out if the molded parts you either make in-house or buy from a supplier are consistent from mold to mold, from molding machine to molding machine. Because we've noticed these subtle differences, and if we don't see all those variations while the machine is here at the finalization phase, we won't be able to adjust the machine to accommodate it. So you're going to find out, you know, and then you'll adapt, and you'll probably go with a little bit of pain, but then once you can, you know, get the parts consistent, the machine's just never going to stop running. I mentioned earlier that you have seven lines, you have to have all these parts handlers supplying the machines. Mm-hmm. Now you've got one place. You bring the tubing to one place, you bring the plastic components that are on the tube set to one place, you bring the solvent to one place. So now you're talking about one runner, right? Bringing product in from inventory, as opposed to 5, 6, 10 runners trying to supply 7, 8, 9 lines. So a big difference there. You're going to see less scrap. And I believe you're going to have a, you're going to have a happier leadership team. you're going to show results that they've never seen before.
Wow. It's fantastic.
Our machines are running at here at ATS, our FAT documents and artifacts usually state the machine ran around 92 to 95% efficient with less than 1% rejects. That's in a laboratory situation, and we know that, and our customers know it. World-class OEE in a production facility, when you include unavailable time, by that I mean lunches, breaks, routine maintenance, world-class OEE is between 70 and 75%. And most of our customers have achieved that with our tube set machines when they're willing to share that data.
Right. Right. No, it's amazing to hear, truly. Paul, that's all I have for us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I hope the listeners can benefit from our experience.
Thank you.
Hey, have a great day.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to be here with me and our guest, Paul Norden. I'll see you next week with episode 6, Sustainability and Cost Savings, Innovations in Tooling. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with your colleagues.